Hello to all of our wonderful listeners. Welcome to the NetSuite Podcast. I'm your guest host, Megan O'Brien, business and finance editor at NetSuite, which means that you just tuned in to our Office of the CFO series. I am so excited today to get to this episode with Andy Burt. He is the managing director and head of content at CFO and Performative. I'm sure many of you listeners have read some of the amazingly informative articles through CFO and CFO.com, so there is a good chance that you've read some of Andy's wonderful work. And as someone with years of experience in CFO-related publications, we felt that he was just the perfect guest to have on the Office of the CFO series portion of the NetSuite podcast. And even more exciting, he came on to be a part of the Suite World 2022 recap. So in this podcast episode, we discussed the biggest takeaways we had from the conference, some of the most salient points from our interviews with revolutionary CFOs, if I do say so myself, and our thoughts on the future of the role. If you want the highlights from the finance perspective of Suite World, you are not going to want to miss this one. So stay tuned. That's all coming up next.
You're listening to the NetSuite podcast, where we discuss what's happening within NetSuite, why we're doing it, and where we're heading in the future. We'll dive into the details about the software and the people at NetSuite who are behind all the moving parts. We'll also feature customer growth stories, discussing the ups and downs of running a company and how one integrated system can help your business continue to scale.
Hi, Andy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Megan. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yes. So we are coming to the end of a very exciting week at Suite World. How was it for you?
Really intense, I have to say. I think anytime you spend more than a 48-hour turnaround in Las Vegas, you're kind of pushing the limits of human experience. But couple that with an extra few days at Suite World, it's kind of an overload of information, of people, of events, of sessions, great keynotes. It's going to take me a while to kind of process everything that I experienced.
I think it's nice that it kind of ends when you're going into a weekend, because I'm like, I just need a second to sit on my couch, maybe just like write a few things down, come to terms with everything. But yeah, I totally agree, because we do get to meet really amazing people here. My first Suite World was last year, but it was a little scaled down. It was still huge and overwhelming and intense, but I think it was about half the size of what it is this year. So this year was just very exciting energy.
Yeah. What would you say is the biggest year versus year difference that you've experienced?
I think just in terms of actually the amount of people that I got to kind of socialize with, and that's more, probably less on the nature of Suite World and more on my kind of attitude change, because last year I was so focused on doing all these things, getting all this stuff done, and like this year I was like, I just want to chat with people. I want to learn more about their business. I want to learn more about how NetSuite is playing a role in that. I want to learn about people's different paths to becoming what they are today, and it's really fascinating. So it was almost like taking the time to slow down, but at the same time, it was a very fast-paced slow down.
For sure, and I know that we are both working while we're here, and I'm sure a lot of others are as well. Are you introverted or extroverted? Like, what is that like for you?
I always consider, we were joking around about this yesterday when I was out at dinner. I always considered myself a huge introvert. And when I was younger, my parents started to be like, you need to pull it together, kid. You know, make eye contact. Go ahead and like do the firm business handshake. So my dad was giving me business handshake lessons. We were trying to learn how to look people in the eyes while speaking. So I think I've been trained into being more of an extrovert at this point, but by nature, introvert, 100%.
Gotcha. So how would you teach somebody to have a good business handshake?
Oh my God. Okay. So for everyone out there, I grew up Catholic. So of course I had to go to church every week, and you had to do this, the peace, handshake with everyone in the church. And so my dad would just look at me and he's like, look him in the eyes, grip their hands, no dead fish handshake. And so he kind of coached me through that.
So now I pride myself on having a good business handshake.
Solid.
Yeah. But what about you? Are you an extrovert or introvert?
I'm definitely an introvert, but I've found that as I've grown older and I've experienced more opportunity to be at these types of events, that I really enjoy the human interaction. And I think that's one thing that I always take away from these experiences. It's that, yeah, we're here to work, we're here to make this, help make this event meaningful for everybody. Mm-hmm. But everyone you come in contact with, whether it's the CFO of a large company or, you know, a young tech person who's just kind of getting their feet wet in their career, they want to have a human experience. Mm-hmm. And that means if you take a moment to ask them about how they're doing, you know, what they're learning, what they're excited about, you can have these really personal exchanges, even for somebody that you've just met. And so for me as an introvert also, I always look for those types of opportunities. But I have to say, by the end of the day, I'm just kind of laying in bed, staring at the ceiling, trying to figure out how I'm gonna recharge for the next day.
I kick off my shoes, I lay in bed, I had a stash of cookies in my room, and I would just lay there for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, like, just give me a minute, just stop texting me.
Yeah, no one talk to me, I just need a minute.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, I mean, you in your role, you kind of almost have to be a little bit of a extrovert, right? I mean, first of all, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do and kind of how you got into it?
Sure, yeah, I can give you a little bit of background. So my role is with a publication, a digital publication called CFO and CFO.com. Mm-hmm. It's a legacy publication. It's been around for 30 years. It used to be one of those glossy print magazines that you'd see in doctor's offices and things like that. But times change, and so we had to move it into a digital format. And so my role is I'm the managing director over all the content that we do. So I get a chance to work with some phenomenal journalists and great storytellers. You know, that's what we do, is we tell stories. And then build relationships with CFOs and finance executives and the rest of the C-suite to be able to deliver them information that they find useful in their careers, in building their relationships, in their management style. And so we, you know, we do this on a day-to-day basis, and that's why we're here. We had a chance to partner with NetSuite. They asked us to be here to help cover the events. And I even got the opportunity to do some TV, hosted a couple panels. And so that was an exciting opportunity for me.
How was the TV event? I know you've done a lot of podcasts before, and it shows. Have you done anything on TV?
I've never done anything on TV. I always say I have a face for radio. And so when Fritz Nelson, who is one of the co-anchors, mm-hmm. asked me, would you be interested, it was one of those moments where, you know, as an introvert, we have to challenge ourselves to say, how can I move a little bit outside of my comfort zone? Because I feel like I need to grow in this kind of area. And so I just instinctively said yes, even though inside I was a little bit of, you know, a little turmoil, because it's like, what's this going to feel like? But I think the amazing thing is Kendall came into the conversation with Fritz, and they are so supportive about, here's all you need to do. You need mm-hmm. to tell your story. You need to ask great questions, and we'll handle all of the production and all the things that you might have some anxiety over. You don't need to worry about any of that. And that was exactly the experience that I had. All the production people, the managers and the makeup people, they're just phenomenal. And so all I had to do was just get out there and smile and ask questions and watch that time fly by.
No, I kind of get that feeling with a lot of, so we do the Office of the CFO series, and every so often we get people who are like, I'm just nervous, and I don't know what to say, I don't know what to do, and like, I haven't done podcasts before, things like that. And I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, I think CFOs can really benefit from that experience, because things like these, it's a very safe space. Like, mm-hmm. people are here to like help you, you know, we're here to hear your story and kind of do so in a very fun, comfortable way. So it's always hard to get out of your comfort zone, but I think that once you do it, it's just like, that was a lot better than I thought.
Yeah, and maybe you've experienced this too, but when you're interviewing somebody, and I know you've interviewed a lot of people over the past couple days, is that you realize that your job is to make them the star. Mm-hmm. And so if you're anxious, if they're anxious, all you're trying to do is put them at ease so that they can be the person that you want to just come out and exude to the audience, whatever it might be. And so on one of my panels, I know we had two veterans, and they knew exactly what to do and what to say and how to help manage the conversation. And there was one who, it was his first experience. And so my job is to make it as easy as possible for him to just share about his experience, his life, his work. And he did a great job. And the next time he does it, he'll be even better. And so it's personally rewarding for me when I see people learn in real time about, hey, I can do this really well. That's incredibly fulfilling to me.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people in business, they want to grow their brands, they want to get out there a little more, they have thoughts that they want to share, but they're a little nervous about how to do it. But there's actually so many mediums for you to do it. Mm-hmm. Small plug, if you want your like content written, come to me, because I'm always looking for CFO perspectives.
Brilliant. So I have to ask you, could you share what your favorite interview was this past week?
Oh gosh. I hate to choose one because all of them were so great in their own way. I feel like I had so much fun with everyone. I think the one that like kind of just almost surprised me the most was the Johnny Pops interview. So mm-hmm. we did an interview with the CFO at Johnny Pops, which is a frozen treat company out of Minnesota. And his name's Connor Ray. He is the CFO and co-founder of it. He had started this company when he was in college. He and his friend just had this idea and they said, I think it's really good, we're gonna run with it. So while everyone else was partying and, you know, going crazy in college, they were making popsicles, they were creating business plans, they were coming together to figure out how to get this business off the ground. And now they're in all 50 states, they're in a couple of foreign retailers, they've really given back to their community as well and really just prioritized their community impact. It's a huge part of their mission. And I'm looking at this guy who is a year younger than me. I'm thinking, good Lord, this is amazing. At one point, it just kind of came out unprompted. You're so young. He just kind of looked at me. I was like, that was not the most professional way to say that. But it's true. It's amazing what people have done. And some of the most salient advice that he kind of gave was the fact that it was a lot of hard work. There was like some doubt involved of, can I actually do this full time? Shouldn't I like go get a quote unquote real job? Like I'm going into entrepreneurship and I'm, you know, I don't know. And he was just saying, you got to stick with it. It's a lot more work than you would think. It's a ton of setbacks, but as long as you keep believing in that mission and kind of the vision that you've set for yourself, you're gonna be able to kind of pull it together.
Yeah, I would second that. And I had a chance to listen in on some of your conversation with Connor. Mm-hmm. And I think you can almost divide it into two categories. One is he's got to be incredibly smart and motivated.
Yes.
And hardworking, because we asked him, did you study finance? Did you study accounting? He said, no, I studied some economics and computer science. Mm-hmm. And my first thought was, how did you translate that into the language of business? Like, that's not an easy thing to do. And he figured it out. And, you know, fortunately for him, he discovered NetSuite. And,
yep.
And I imagine that a lot of the software platforms helped him in that learning curve. And you have to remember, he's learning all this in real time, how to do all of these things, the production, the distribution, the sales process, and all the finance stuff. He's doing all of this in real time, and he's learning how to do it. And so you get that sense of he's incredibly smart, he's incredibly motivated. But the longer you talk to him, you realize how unassuming he is and really humble. It's sort of that Midwestern kind of humility. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, I'm just doing my thing, and we're learning, and we're growing, and we're excited about it. And it's just a marvelous combination of, you know, the work ethic and the day-to-day humility that I think makes him an outstanding leader.
And you know what? It was funny because it's funny that you touch on that, because I was talking to a CFO, and her name's Shauna Veal, yesterday. Mm-hmm. And she is the CFO of PharmChem, which does drug testing through skin patches.
Yeah.
And she was so unassuming, and you know, she was saying, oh, you know, I do what needs to get done. And I thought to myself, yeah, of course. I mean, we all do that. But then she's talking about it. And I'm like, you're not just a CFO. You're a CFO. You're doing a lot of HR. You're doing a lot of kind of like inventory type stuff. There was one point in the pandemic where she and her husband are literally packing up supplies to go out to different places because things had just shut down. And I literally said to her, you need to put all this on your LinkedIn and on your resume, like not just CFO, but CFO-inventory management-HR-, like it just kept going. And I kept saying on the interview, well, add that to the list. I mean, you're not giving yourself enough credit. And she's like, I see things that need to get done and I do it.
Yeah, that's a great common trait that we saw in both of those people. And I've had a chance to talk with a lot of either small business owners or CFOs that are working for up-and-coming companies that are growing really rapidly. And one of the takeaways that I always got, whether they said it explicitly or they demonstrated it implicitly, is that when you want to be a leader that has impact on the people and the business, you have to have the courage to lead and make hard decisions, but you also have to have the humility to clean the bathrooms at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. If you can do both of those things and demonstrate it and emulate it for the rest of your company, you're building something that's really special.
Yeah, and I swear we didn't plan this, but you keep segueing perfectly into one of my other interviews. Okay, so I did an interview with Jen Hurdler, who is the CFO over at Impact Health, and they did this massive pivot at in 2020 to start doing COVID testing and vaccination programs. And she had taken a lot of time off to raise her kids, to grow her family. And she had come back into the workforce after like 10 years out. And she came into a technology class to catch up on some financial modeling techniques and things like that. And she said initially she felt so embarrassed because she was always the last one done with things and she was having trouble keeping up with all the young people in there. But one thing that she realized throughout the process was she kind of had a leg up on all these business fundamentals like collaboration, communication, kind of just working well across the business. And she's someone too who has a huge HR focus. And so she's like, yeah, I was nervous coming back in. Yeah, I had to tell people, okay, I had like 10 years to raise my kids. But I also said, look, I have all these fundamentals that come with years and years of experience. And basically, you're going to want those. And I mean, she was right. She grew that company from, what was it, like 300 employees to like 20,000. And yeah, I mean, it's just, I think we obviously here at NetSuite place a huge emphasis on knowing technology, and it's beyond important, but it's also like a question of like, can you do the fundamentals?
Yeah. And I'd like to touch on two aspects of that, because I've had a chance to talk to Jen as well. Mm-hmm. And her business is of the type where when the pandemic started, a lot of companies were getting shut down, furloughed, things like that. Her company was exploding. And as you said, growing up to 20,000 nurses across the country, they were setting up pop-ups all over the place, sometimes with a 48-hour turnaround to be able to meet the testing needs. They were building partnerships in at least 20 to 25 states at a time. And so the infrastructure that they had to develop very, very quickly, and also to develop the internal processes, moving from outdated accounting software and back of the envelope kind of efforts to something that is enterprise level that can handle the rapid scaling up, then the rapid scaling down, because then there was a lull in the pandemic, but then it spiked again, mm-hmm. and so they had to ramp it back up. Does a very distinctive experience for a company when everything around them is probably just trying to figure out how to stay open. And they were trying to figure out, how do we grow this as fast as we can, but also so it's sustainable. So her leadership and her background in change management, I think really came into play there.
And I kind of want to highlight that issue of change management, because one thing I've heard, I mean, especially this week, but like, let's be honest, over the past 2.5 years, is all these people have to change really quickly. All these businesses all of a sudden oh my gosh, customer demand is way, way up. Oh, it's down. Oh, people don't want what we have anymore. Oh, they really want it now. Like, how do you think CFOs can kind of prepare for this type of, and I always use the Netflix Blockbuster example, where Blockbuster was like, no, I don't think it's really changing. And then all of a sudden it was,
it's gone.
Yeah, it was, I call it the sticky pivot foot. How do you think CFOs today can kind of keep up with all that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, and it's kind of fun to tweak CFOs when you say, you know, the bean counter term or something like that. And they're like, no, we actually do quite a bit more than that. But I do think the pandemic did something to the CFO role in bringing it to the surface level of awareness, notoriety, about how absolutely critically important the role is when things are not going well. You know, and obviously in the U.S. economy, we go through our cycles. You know, it has a pretty regular cadence to it. We kind of know when the peaks and the valleys are going to come. And that allows for a lot of forecasting and predictability and things like that. But then you get an experience like the pandemic when suddenly everything is falling apart and nobody really knows what the right steps forward are. The CFOs were the ones that really stepped up, in my view, in my analysis of the situation, because companies needed to figure out how do we avoid having to close our doors. And one of the acronyms that I like that one of my former COO shared with me at my company, he said, it's a simple acronym. It's DROOM, D-R-O-O-M. And that simply means don't run out of money. If you can figure that piece out, you can survive and weather a lot of the storms. And that means, you know, you take a look at your balance sheet, you take a look at where your cash outlays are going, and you figure out what do we need to be able to survive. And then you start to look at, okay, do we need to raise capital? Can we renegotiate the terms on our loans? Can we find investors? Can we issue more stock? The CFOs were figuring all of this stuff out when everything seemed like it was falling apart. And I think they finally got a lot of credit that was due to them about not just being the quote-unquote bean counters, but the strategic leaders that companies have to have when there's so much unpredictability with what's going on.
I actually heard a term in one of the sessions I went to. It was by Tom Kelly, who is here at NetSuite, and he always has the funniest slides, and I love it. But he started referring to it as you have to be a bean counter and a bean grower. So you have to, like, you have to know how to create that value. You can't just, like, count the value after after the fact. But I am going to start saying DROOM every time I look at my checking account. Like, just
don't run out of money.
Don't run out of money, Megan. Stop getting takeout.
Yeah, but then here's what happens is it's not like their role receded. They actually realized not only can I be the strategic leader within my company, but it's something that makes us competitive, more competitive than you know, if I was just taking a lesser role. Like if you ever look at it in an earnings call transcript, CEO gets the flashy headlines, the CMO gets to talk about, you know, market acquisition, the technology people talk about capital investments and how they're going to transform the business, and then the CFO says, here's our EPS. Here's our growth prospects. Okay, I'll exit stage right. Like that's changed, and I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know Jack McCulloch?
I do.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah. I love him. So we've had him on the podcast before, but I also just interviewed him for an article of kind of how the CFO can be a better strategic partner to the CEO, basically what CEOs want out of their CFOs. And he said something along the lines of, you know, your CEO is Mick Jagger, you know, the performer, the charisma, the person who can, like, really sell it. But you as CFO, you are Keith Richards, and you, I mean, you rock that guitar, and you're really, really good at what you do. And, like, you also, like, have a little show power. You kind of, like, can bring it as well.
Yeah, you can pull off that solo from time to time.
Right, yeah. Right. So, yeah, he's always fantastic to talk to, just kind of a good amount of insight because he has been a CFO, but he's also been a mentor towards a lot of CFOs, and he's a huge proponent for having a mentor, just especially now, like, your company could be a very small company, and then something random happens and demand surges, and all of a sudden maybe you're heading for an IPO and it's like, I've never done an IPO before. So kind of finding someone who has that experience who can say, okay, like let's tackle this.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so much of what he does, he's the president of the CFO Leadership Council. Mm-hmm. And so he sets up these organizations all over the country where CFOs can come together to be together and be their support systems to give them advice and counsel when they're going through those types of challenges, which I think is tremendous because in my experience, when I go to large events, the CFOs tend to, you know, just kind of huddle together because they're just trying to figure out how to solve problems and things like that. And so Jack gives them the space to do that. And that's what we try to do on CFO.com as well, is give them the space where they can just talk to each other because that's kind of who they want to hear from.
How did 6 out of the top 7 best performing tech stocks gain visibility and control over financials, inventory, planning, and budgeting with NetSuite by Oracle? Answers at netsuite.com/code. netsuite.com/code.
And I got to dig into that because you have such a unique perspective and insight into this as someone who kind of oversees all this and sees everything happening kind of through. Can you talk about how maybe the conversations or the problems have changed since the start? How have they evolved? What's different?
I think business has become more complex, mm-hmm. And that's due to the technology. It's due to the global competitive nature of industry these days. And then there are certain aspects that have become wildly complex. And the one that comes to mind is supply chain issues. One of the really interesting conversations that I've had in the past is talking to Jack Hartung, who is the CFO of Chipotle. You might be familiar with Chipotle.
I am very familiar.
Yeah. And so I had a chance to interview him and also his supply chain manager. And I had them talk to each other about, you know, how do you get on the same page with between finance and supply chain? And he actually said, supply chain rolls up to finance in our company. And I think that makes a ton of sense for,
yeah.
Especially when you're talking about food, of course, but there should be a synergy between the supply chain manager and the CFO. I think it makes a ton of sense, but I don't see it that often. But I think those who kind of figure it out, they realize that it's a really important aspect. And one of the gentlemen that I had a chance to interview, his name is Avi Cohen.
Okay.
He's a CFO for a company called Cabinets to Go. And they do kitchen renovation, so manufacturing, lots of raw materials, importing from overseas. And so he's worrying about shipping containers arriving into ports, getting those containers to the distribution channels and things like that. And it's just so amazing to hear a CFO who is fluent in the language of supply chain. And I think that is a big way in which CFOs have to be thinking outside of the traditional, you know, the accounting world, the finance world, the forecasting stuff. You have to really understand in a more holistic way how your company functions, especially when you have a supply chain that is integral to it.
It's just so much turmoil in it. So how do you think he kind of goes about learning about the supply chain issues? Is it really just having a close collaboration?
You really, this is just my opinion.
Okay.
Because these people are really smart. But you have to have critical roles that bring out the supply chain issues or anything that is sort of central to your business, because the language that they speak is not the same. And even within the supply chain, I tend to not to, you know, go off on a tangent too much, but I think of supply chain with 4 components to it. And so when we say supply chain, we might be talking about very different things. The acronym that I like acronyms, is...
It's business.
Yeah,
we do acronyms.
We do lots of acronyms. So if you remember the expression FLOP, FLOP, okay? So FLOP represents freight, logistics, operations, and procurement. Okay, so if you're thinking about supply chain end-to-end, I think it encompasses all of those things. Whether you're going out and you're finding the stuff, the raw materials, that's procurement.
Mm-hmm.
You're bringing it to your plant to build, that's the operations. You're figuring out how to deliver it to the companies that are going to sell it. That's, you know, that's freight, that's logistics. We have to make sure that we're talking about the same things, because if you just say supply chain, you might be thinking logistics, like how do I get this stuff on a truck to be able to deliver it across the country, where another person might be thinking about, no, supply chain is how we actually build the stuff in our plants. Mm-hmm. And those are two different, very different things. And so it's hard enough within the supply chain to know what you're talking about. But now the CFO has to understand those components as well. And that's what somebody like Avi, it's somebody like what Jack Hartung has figured out. And I think that's what really is going to distinguish how CFOs think strategically as leaders.
Mm-hmm. So is it kind of a knowledge across the whole business, or are they prioritizing certain parts of the business, like the supply chain? Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like we see the CFO going in a direction of just a lot more collaboration across the entire business, but there is always that nagging thought in my mind of, how do you make enough time for that? How do you get to know every part of the business? And I talked to Jen Hurdler about that, because mm-hmm. she loves kind of tapping into the operational side of things. And I said to her, how do you do all the finance and all the, she's working for an incredibly fast growing company, and then you're also kind of jumping into operations and helping out with HR and all these things. Is it a time management? Is it just kind of a mindset of continuous learning? How do you get it all done?
It's a great question, and I think time management, it rolls right up into leadership, because I think, at least in my own experience, as you know, if I want to call myself a leader in some way, it's, you have to understand when it's time to let things go, because part of your job is not just to figure out how to do the things, because if you just do that, you bottleneck your company. Mm-hmm. But you have to know and value how to hire and train up really good people. So that they can take those things off your plate. That is an essential component of being a leader, and that matters whether you're a company of 10 or 10,000. You have to understand it's. And I don't love the term delegation. I think that encompasses it, but I think it's more about how do you raise your teammates up so that they can become leaders in their own right. And CFOs who figure that out, not only have they figured out how to manage their own time better, but they've also improved the company in a very material way, because now you've got people around you that can capably do all the things that you don't have time for, mm-hmm. but you're giving them a purpose, a higher purpose in their own careers. And so now they have aspirations to grow, and they have a motivation to do so, because they know that their efforts will be rewarded with more responsibilities, and they may be a CFO down the road as well.
That's something that I've kind of heard in a couple of interviews, is hire a really good controller, someone that you see as future CFO, because mm-hmm. then they can kind of handle making sure the train runs on time, AKA the revenue recognition, getting everything, kind of handling the close processes, and then the CFO can go more into the strategic side of things, which I thought was an interesting concept.
Yeah, and I'm trying. The case study that we looked at a while ago, it was with Edgewood Resorts, and
I have talked to them before, yeah. and they are amazing. I just have to give context here, because they are a company in Lake Tahoe. They run a beautiful lodge, has golf courses and
very
restaurants, yeah. and I just sit there scrolling through their website like, I wonder if they'll invite me. But they've also had a lot of trouble, because obviously COVID hit hospitality and leisure very, very hard. Travel still hasn't rebounded. And then they also dealt with a wildfire, mm-hmm. and they had to evacuate.
Yeah.
So I had to like throw that in there, because it still just blows my mind that CFO, who is the nicest man in the world, was like, yeah, you know, we just had to keep plodding along.
Yeah. Yeah. Once again, that Midwestern kind of humility.
Exactly.
So his name is Aaron Hartwig. Mm-hmm. And I encourage anybody who's listening to check out Edgewood, because he just has a really powerful story, and it's not just through his leadership, but it's how he valued all the people on his team. And because at the beginning of when everything was starting to go down and they didn't know how long it was going to last, he said, we're not going to furlough anybody. We're not going to lay off anybody. We are going to figure out how to not run out of money, and we're going to keep these people so that you know, they're able to survive the challenges. Because if we lose our people, if we lose our talent, we're dead. You know, we can probably survive through, you know, wildfires and pandemic shutdowns, but if we lose our people, we won't exist anymore. And I think that's a really rare thing for a CFO to not only have that perspective, but to espouse it. I mean, I think CFOs do care about their people, but to say this is a key component of our strategy, and it's an offensive strategy, it's not a defensive one, because they could have easily furloughed people and then try to hire them back later. But he said, no, that's not the way we're going to do this. And I think it really, it resonates with his staff, and it really comes through in his story.
Well, so we always do our quarterly NetSuite survey, and we interview 500 executives. And a lot of times what we try to do, sometimes we are more finance focused, but sometimes what we do is we get an even split between finance and non-finance executives. And we kind of see how their perspectives on spending, priorities, concerns, how that all compares. And usually there's kind of a big disparity there, which we can talk about in a bit. But the big thing that we noticed recently was finance executives were much more inclined to say they wanted to pay their people more. And that was like one of their big spending areas, was pay increases, making sure they kind of retain talent. I'm not coming after non-finance executives. It was just everyone was on board for paying more, but finance was noticeably more leaning towards that, to just keep talent on.
Yeah, and I think it does radiate from their CFO's general perspective that they understand the margins really well. And I mean, this isn't, you know, a secret. We have an inflationary rate that outpaces the growth rate of wages right now. And so I think CFOs recognize that and realize they have to be proactive to be able to deal with that.
And just looking at the hiring times, the expenses associated with it, I talked to one company that it was a Sail GP. They do these really cool boat races all around the world. So kind of a dream company to work for. It took them 15 months to find an accountant. Like not onboard them, just to find them.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's just incredibly expensive. And then you're working a man down.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've talked to executive headhunter firms, and they say the exact same things. They say certain key roles, you can't even find them. And it's not even a question of they're too expensive. It's just they're not there. I think this is what a lot of companies face company-wide, but I think within the finance teams especially, it's difficult. It's difficult to do that recruiting, to find the people who are capable of doing these types of things, which makes retention all the more important.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just hinting at a couple of raises and bonuses. Hello. So I kind of want to, we're coming to the end of our time at Sweet World, and a little bit towards the end of the time for the podcast. And I just like, what are the top three things that you took away from meeting with finance execs here and kind of going to the sessions and learning more about the pain points and what people are doing? What are kind of your top three takeaways?
I think one of them, perhaps the most impactful to me, is when I had a chance to interview Melissa Herrington on one of the panels that I did. She's a CFO of a company called Premier Claims. And so they are the advocates for the people who are filing claims against insurance providers. And all week, she has been documenting her experience working with her team, sending them to Florida. Obviously, Hurricane Ian has been going on, and there's a lot to clean up.
Yeah.
And so even in the midst of her being here and helping me out with my panel, and she is a rock star. Like, everybody loves her. Everybody just sings her praises. And it's easy to see why, because she's so smart but so personable. And I think that is such a great illustration of what it means to be a leader in this time and in these challenges is that you can be both. You can be a strategic leader that has to make hard decisions at times, but you can also do it in such a way that is tender to the circumstances, whether it's for your own team that you're literally sending into the eye of the storm, or the people that they work with. And when you can model that as a leader, and then your teammates can follow your lead, now you've got something that's really special. And I hope people know about her. And if you don't, you need to learn, because I think she exemplifies what it means to be a leader today. So I think that's my biggest takeaway.
Go back in our podcast history. We interviewed her. She is a delight. And she had a lot of cool insights, in, especially around actually database storytelling. Mm-hmm. She was just saying that, I love when numbers tell a story. So I love when I have time to analyze and say, this is what is happening and this is why it's happening. Things that we music to our ears at NetSuite. So she really hit the nail on the head with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my second takeaway was during the first keynote session, there was almost like a mini Shark Tank round that that we did, where I believe four different startups had a chance to present the case for their business to a panel of four. I think Evan was one, and they had three other. I don't recall their names off the top of my head.
I don't either, but they had the most impressive backgrounds. I mean, you had people in venture capital, private equity. You had a lot of past veterans. I mean, just really amazing people.
Yeah.
And I tried to say hello to them at the party last night, but I just got like camera shy a little.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to say to someone that impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And so having a chance to observe that, it's one, it's great. It's always great for me to hear about entrepreneurs just like Connor. But two, I think it's important because I think NetSuite recognizes the importance of innovation and being able to have the confidence to start a business, because even in the midst of all the economic turmoil that we're facing right now, and we don't know how long it's going to last, that there are still people unafraid to build out a business idea and go in front of however many thousands of people are here at this and make the case and, you know, be grilled for a couple minutes by these expert investors. And that speaks really well to the spirit of innovation, I think, within the country to persist even amidst these challenges. And for NetSuite to recognize, yeah, there's a business opportunity because they want to be able to partner with these companies and help them grow, but also to be able to elevate them to the platform that they have at Suite World. I mean, that's just an incredible thing that I think we did.
And every company that pitched as a part of this had just a huge human component to it. So the first was a company that had created an app that helped people pay off their student loans, literally just gave them the financial advice needed to pay off their student loans well. The second was essentially glasses that would allow doctors and specialists to see whatever condition was being treated by the person on hand with the patient, just because of such a medical professional shortage that we are going to have to use technology to make sure that everyone gets the health care that they need. And then the last one being a software that, an AI-based software, I believe, that goes through and highlights any sort of discriminatory or biased language that might be present in job postings that you might not even think about. You might think, oh, this is, I mean, you're kind of building a job posting based on past job postings that may have not catered to everyone. So all young, fantastic, really well-spoken pitches, and everyone had to vote at the end, and I really struggled with the vote. I just wanted to be like, everyone did a great job.
Yeah, you're all winners.
You're all winners in my book.
Yeah, yeah, which is actually true, because I think they will all find success in their own ways. And
yeah.
You know, that's just a really good sign for just the future of our economy and, you know, the people who want to build things that address pain points. I think that's outstanding. I would say, let's see, my third big takeaway, or maybe it's a small takeaway, it'll feel small, is that CFOs still really enjoy meeting with each other, and they want to learn from each other. Even just in our little, you know, prep meetings with some of my panels, is there's a natural inquisitiveness that they have with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they all share the same title, but they don't do the same things or the same way. You know, one of my panel, you know, one was in travel and hospitality, one was in supply chain, a third was in legal e-discovery software. Those are nothing alike, but because of the experience that they have, they had this natural bond that happens very quickly. And at least for me, from a personal standpoint, I like to see that. I like to see people wanting to help each other. And I think whether that's in large ways or small ways, that's a big, big opportunity for coming together with Sweet World, is you create the environment where they can do that. And it brings satisfaction to them, and that in turn helps them become better leaders.
So I have to ask, going down the line, what do you think is on the docket editorially? What topics do you think are going to be most important to you guys going forward for, let's say, the next year?
I think one of the big takeaways that we've gotten in our own surveys is that CFOs prepared their companies really well for what we're dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it started a year, 2 years ago. They mapped it out really well. But what about the next year? How are they going to peer into the future and figure out, okay, if inflation doesn't subside, if interest rates do continue to rise, and they probably will, what does that mean for the vitality of our business? And I think that is the big area of exploration that we will continue editorially, is because we want to know, how are you going to continue to lead the company when you don't really know how long it's going to last? And in our own surveys, most expected is that the inflationary environment will last less than 2 years,
mm-hmm.
somewhere around the next 12 months or so. Well, if they can figure that out, then they can plan on how to help their company survive, just like they did with the pandemic. But there's always that element of uncertainty, and that's why it's important for them to be in places like this and to work with NetSuite, because all of those are become support systems for how they've helped carry their company.
Yeah, and I do feel like from my perspective, I have to imagine that you kind of put together a lot of things and did it very, very quickly, and you want to do it right the first time around, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're dealing with a pandemic. All of a sudden, your supply chain is completely broken. You're kind of like throwing things into place to stay afloat. And I do wonder if the next couple of years is kind of going to be revisiting some of those things and not necessarily redoing everything, but maybe you hastily implemented like a piece of technology, and now you want to hone in on like what you actually wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And like maybe you hired a bunch of people to cover things, and now it's like, okay, we need to make their roles more specialized. And
mm-hmm.
I think in my view, I have to wonder if it's going to be kind of a, okay, we're looking back to go forward.
Yeah.
Sense.
Yeah, and that is sort of the nature of the CFO anyway, is, you know, you have to look back to look forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, where a lot of the software helps. I mean, it's not just NetSuite, but a lot of companies hear about that, solving some of those pain points. But you got to be able to look forward. You can't be afraid to do it. Because you want to grow and you want your companies to do well, and you have to have the courage to be able to do that.
Do you want to hear what my biggest takeaway was?
Go for it.
Okay. It's from the interview with Jen Hurdler, where she was like, I think I'd end with this. I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty much getting the words exactly right, where she was like, you got to bet on yourself, you got to take risks, and you kind of got to be ballsy. And I loved that.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that impresses me about her is, you know, that 10-year gap. That's real life, you know,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes real life happens, and especially for women, I have to say, you know, and for my own wife, she had a similar 10-year gap in her career. You can't be afraid to bet on yourself, because there is so much in that brain and in those experiences that still are really, really important as for leadership, for execution, for change management,
mm-hmm.
and that's a great word from Jen.
Yeah, and it's a great way to end our podcast today. Take risks, be ballsy. I think that's the way to end it.
Yeah.
Andy, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure hanging out with you at Sweet World, and I love that we could do this recap together.
Yeah, this is a blast, and I hope everybody listening gets some takeaways out of this, because the CFOs just have some amazing stories to tell.
Well, that was such a fantastic interview to host and a perfect way to wrap up our many, many thoughts on the excitement of Sweet World 2022. I love the perspective that Andy has from years of telling the stories of CFOs and telling them really well, particularly his thoughts on what it means to be an effective leader in today's environment. Truly powerful stuff and such a pleasure to have on the podcast. So big shout out to Andy Burt for joining us. We hope to have him on again soon. And last, but certainly not least, I want to extend another thank you to our editing crew over at Lamsand, and as always, all of you for tuning in. If you want more episodes just like this one, make sure you subscribe to our channel and give us a rating and review. Thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
You just listened to the NetSuite podcast. Be sure to tune in every week with more NetSuite developments, stories, and insights into the benefits of one integrated system to help you run your business.